Now in studio joining us, he's the president and CEO of CACI International, Paul Cofone. Paul is running CACI International, Incorporated, which provides IT and network solutions for federal customers. Primary areas include Homeland Security, Intelligence, and National Security. They have 10,500 employees plus, working in over 120 offices in the U.S. and Europe. Founded in 1962, publicly owned since 1968, CACI is a member of the Fortune 1000 Largest Companies of 2007, $1.94 billion in fiscal year 2007 revenues. Paul, welcome to the Leader Spot. That's the longest introduction we've had.
Thank you very much. It was a great introduction, Rebecca.
Did I get your, did I report all your facts?
I think you've covered it. Yeah.
Now tell us more. Thank you for joining us. And tell us more about what your company specializes in.
Well, our company does a wide array of things, Rebecca. We are principally focused on the federal marketplace. We're a services company. So we serve virtually all aspects of the federal government. We also have a small part of our business that's based in the United Kingdom that deals with software to assist retail outlets in positioning, locating their stores. But our real focus is in the federal government. 70% of what we do for the federal government has to do with the Department of Defense and in the intelligence community. So that is the specialty areas in terms of the things we do. You've mentioned a number of them already. Systems integration, large-scale systems, both in the sense of systems that are used classically for finance applications, purchasing applications, human resource applications, but also applications that are in direct support of the warfighter. So, for example, integrating systems on Stryker Brigade vehicles to take sensory data related to chemical, biological, radiological sensing in the field of war, theater of war, and to bring back that data and manifest it as a report or display for brigade commanders for Stryker vehicles. That's one example. Another example is our people are actively engaged in evolving technology and integrating technology that will defeat IEDs in the field. These are all sorts of deployable technologies. Communications, network communications is a big part of what we do as well. And that is, again, both the classic network engineering and operations and support, but also tactical communication. So if you remember when Katrina occurred, we provided suitcase-sized portable communication systems that would go into the area and reestablish communications using voice, data, video, satellite technology. And also we outfit large communications vehicles that are in theater of war to support the warfighter. We also establish counterintelligence or capturing of enemy signals as well. That's a communications part of what we do. We have a knowledge management business. It's not the classic type of knowledge management. It's more about document exploitation. So if you remember those images of documents coming out of the caves in Afghanistan, all those large caches of documents were ingested or read into our systems and translated from foreign language to English, tagged for searches to provide tactical intelligence information. And that system is utilized widely throughout the services to ingest all sorts of media, not just documents, but also other media as well. I think those are the key areas. We're also we do a great deal of consulting and engineering services for both the Department of Defense and civil agencies. We're involved in large modernization programs for civil agencies as well. That's sort of a flavoring of our specialty areas.
Excellent. And, you know, I know that you are personally interested in these areas in addition. In fact, you were telling me earlier how, you know, you have grandkids and you're concerned about the security for them for the future. And so that actually motivates you. So you actually became a CEO in an issue area that also lines up with your interests.
Exactly, Rebecca. You know, as I look at what's unfolded in the last six plus years, in terms of the threat to our nation, security from global terrorism, and the likelihood that that sort of thing could happen again, it causes me to give personal concentration to the issue. I also, from a business point of view, have spent my career trying to position myself right at the center of our client's number one problem. And that makes me relevant personally and our business relevant. And our nation's number one problem, make no mistake, is global terrorism. And it began before
September 11th.
It began way before September 11th. You can date it back to the Iran hostage crisis in the early 80s. And on, I don't have to repeat all those for you, but there have been acts of terror. As a country, we perceive them as individual mm-hmm. events, and I don't think until recently we have connected the dots as a country. I still think in the country there's a lack of understanding and awareness of the persistence of this threat. It's generational in nature, and it's because the interests of the adversary cannot be reconciled against our own interests. We have a need to be in that part of the world, and we have energy dependence from that part of the world. We also have strategic allies in that part of the world, and we can't retreat from that part of the world. So it's independent of the debate about Iraq. It's all about the threat to our nation. And it will be like the Cold War was to you and I, where our parents, our grandparents dealt with that threat and had to manage and work through that. Fortunately, the country was able to solve that problem. The new threat is global terrorism. It's there for our generation, our children's generation, our grandchildren's generation. It is not going away. It won't suddenly just disappear. And we need to increase the awareness within the country of the threat, that it's a persistent threat. It'll only be defeated when 7, 8, or 9 attempts out of 10 to conduct a terrorist act are defeated or preempted. At that point, the radical ideologists who are involved will see this as an unsuccessful operating model.
So basically, CACI is not going out of business anytime soon.
I think
unfortunately, right?
Unfortunately, I think what we can do is a company. We can work with our clients to shorten that period. And I don't want to leave this problem. Get back to the personal part of this. I don't want to leave this problem for my children or my grandchildren. So we are at the heart of the fight against terrorism. And we are putting our company right there for our clients to help do that.
Paul, we're going to continue talking about this. On the other side of this break, we're going to continue talking about how your company is involved with your goal of fighting terrorism. It's the president and CEO of CACI International, Paul Caffone, on the other side of the Leader Spot. We are here in studio with the president and CEO of CACI International, Paul Caffone. CACI International provides IT and network solutions for federal customers. Primary areas include Homeland Security, Intelligence, and National Security. Over 10,000 employees, 120 offices, $1.94 billion fiscal year 2007 revenues. And Paul, Homeland Security is a key area for CACI. At September 11th, obviously, affected your company in what ways? I know you weren't CEO at that point, but you were involved in the company as a president of U.S. operations sometime post that.
Exactly.
And how did that affect CACI?
Well, it put an enormous demand on us to supply more experts, especially in the areas of intelligence, both from the provisioning of technology to the intelligence community and also supplying people who have analytic skills to the environment. That's been our fastest growing part of the business. It represents roughly a third of our total business. And it's also the centerpiece of our strategy moving forward. Our strategy, Rebecca, moving forward is that because we believe that the threat of global terrorism is the nation's number one problem and we are placing ourselves and our company at the center of solving that problem, helping our clients to solve that problem, then all of our thinking is that this is the best way to defeat terrorism is through the combination of good intelligence and analysis work combined with an operational capability to preempt, interdict, and defeat terrorism. So this nexus of intelligence and operations. So when you see a Heathrow event, or you mm-hmm. or you see a Frankfurt Airport event, and we as citizens see it as an arrest or it looks like a law enforcement action, but what is behind that? Maybe years or months or years of people gathering information, sorting through it, looking for the needle in the haystack, and then you see the law enforcement event. So it's that nexus of the intelligence gathering and analysis, and then the interaction with operating capabilities to interact or prevent the terrorist event. That, I believe, is the first line of defense for our country on terrorism.
Now, another, speaking of kind of expanding your company and dealing with, better dealing with intelligence, terrorism, et cetera, I just read in the Washington Business Journal on Monday that you'll be acquiring Athena Innovative Solutions for $200 million, right?
That's
and
correct.
So you orchestrated this.
Congratulations. I led a team, but it was a team effort. Thank you very much. This is Athena Innovative Solutions is a marvelous company with wonderful people, and many of whom have full careers in the intelligence field, intelligence, counterintelligence, counterterrorism. And they come to us with this breadth of experience. We have 1,200 people that do that sort of work today. They will add another 600. We'll be at 1,800. These are people with the highest security clearances in the federal government, and they're actively engaged in the wide array of Homeland Security activities. And they are part – Athena is part of a long-term strategy. We have been a successful acquirer for a long, long time, over 36 acquisitions over the last 15 years. We've done three just since June. This Athena is the third. It was preceded by IQM and Wexford. All are capabilities that are, again, a combination of skills at the nexus of intelligence and security services.
And you became a CEO earlier this summer, and your goal going forward is to continue this mode of acquisitions? Is that something in a priority area for you?
Absolutely. For the next two or three years, our plan is to do acquisitions that will represent 10 to 15% growth through acquisitions each year for the next two or three years. Those acquisitions will be focused in the areas of homeland security, defense, intelligence to meet the need that we have in this area. So the three acquisitions we've done just so far this year represent over $200 million of top-line growth for our company just through acquisition. We also have had organic growth in the same period. So the company is a growth company, fast growth company, due to both organic growth and acquisitions. And for the next few years, it's centered here on this homeland security and intelligence.
Excellent. And another, so as a CEO, that's one area of your life is really kind of looking at acquisitions, figuring out what's the right time for them, and then closing the deal. But another area is actually bringing in key executive team and a key team to work with you.
That's a good point, Rebecca. I spent a great deal of my time not only looking at acquisitions, but looking for talent. Individual talent that can come into our company and bring with them their expertise and years of experience, domain competence in these areas. And in the last, really in the last 2 years, we've added dramatically to our subject matter expertise, knowledge of the business of intelligence and operations around intelligence, and with notable people mm-hmm. such as Vice Admiral Jake Jacoby, former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. Also, most recently, Vice Admiral Burt Calland. Burt Calland was the number two person at the NCTC, National Counterterrorism Center. Prior to that, he was the number two person at the CIA. Prior to that, he led all of the special operations forces that that went into Afghanistan. He himself was the first flag officer to be on the ground in Afghanistan. So he brings an enormous amount of personal experience with how do you mm-hmm. Interact with intelligence and special operations to deal with the environment, counterterrorism and insurgency type environments. The other acquisitions we've done, Wexford is a primary example of one that has a unique set of skill sets around training in asymmetric warfare. Many of the people in Wexford come to us from special operations experience, and they bring specialized knowledge in how to defeat IEDs or avoid them, and how to look for gaps in our warfighting capability against insurgents. And they bring that experience in the form of training to the troops as before and as they deploy into the theater of war to make sure that they have that special knowledge. So we've brought in some very specialized people who have a strong domain knowledge of what the threat is and what we have to do to overcome the threat.
And part of bringing all these people and this team in is one of the things, as you said, is 70% of your revenues are from DOD. And so one of the things you do is actually go after a lot of large scale contracts at the highest levels of government service. And I'm wondering, I'm wondering your philosophy on this, because sometimes a bigger corporation actually loses the ability to compete because you're considered, oh, they're the big ones. What, you know, we got to give these little guys a chance, right? And so there's this kind of strong, you know, if you're too big, you get certain things, and if you're too big, then you don't get certain things. How do you kind of maneuver as a CEO in that?
That's an excellent question, Rebecca. I think that reaction a buyer or a customer will have is not so much related to size, but is related to agility, responsiveness, the ability to continue to act with agility, even though you're getting larger. In fact, that's a challenge for companies like ours. As we get larger, we've had a very entrepreneurial culture, and we've had real empowerment in the organization to respond to the client and make the client number one. So we have to preserve that. Our challenge mm-hmm. in going after more business is to continue to be perceived as always there for our clients and responsive and willing to be accountable for what we do, making sure we're accountable for what we do. I think that that's the key for us, is focus on flexibility and agility. And we have an unbelievable process for staying in touch with our clients and making sure that we're retaining that.
Now, also as a CEO, I read that about 72% came from the DOD, and you mentioned over 70% earlier. Is there a strategy encompassed in, you know, putting all your eggs in one basket? Or what if, you know, the global terrorism suddenly gets solved? Which I know, you know, what are the chances of that? So do you have to kind of think through that as a CEO, how you're going to handle that?
Yes, exactly. And while I should be careful to point out that while we're talking here about our emerging strategy around counterterrorism and the intersection of intelligence and operations, we do a wide variety of things today. 10,500 people, about roughly a third of those are involved in the new strategy area. The others are doing very important work for civil agencies and other parts of the military, and that will continue. In fact, we must continue that strong base and extend and expand our existing base of work with clients that we've had for 20 or 25 years. So I find myself tending to talk more about our emerging strategy.
It's your passion area,
yeah,
as well.
it's the new passion area. But if you think about our 45 years of existence, there have been times where we have redefined ourselves based on putting the company in the center of the nation's number one problem, and that shifted over the years from domestic needs to military needs to intelligence needs and homeland security needs. Mm-hmm. So the company has been very good at re-engineering itself, so to speak, and rejiggering the strategy to be relevant to the customer by dealing with the top problems. So you know, I think that we have multiple strategies. We're not single strategy focused.
I also noticed that your charitable initiatives, you know, some corporations decide we're going to give back to the community for which our employees live or the surrounding area. One of the things you do, because you're such a large company, is you do that and you do multiple things, but a number of your charities actually center around your company mission. In other words, raising scholarship money for the children of U.S. Navy personnel, or you made contributions to the American Patriot Fund for kids of those attacked in the terrorist attack on the Pentagon. So was that kind of also a company decision, hey, we want to infuse money into the areas in which we also serve expert content for?
Exactly. Keep in mind that, Rebecca, that probably 50% or more of our people have had military service. And when you leave the military, you don't
You don't leave it.
You don't leave it, really.
And you know, right? Because you were you were from the military back in, when was it, the early 70s, right?
70 to 74. I was a regular Army officer for 4 years, had the privilege to serve the country in that capacity, and learned a great deal of what I know today about leadership in those 4 years. I've credited in the past my Army experience with much of what I know today about leadership I learned then. But we don't leave it behind. I still think green. I'm Army, I have a real love for the service and the people who've made this commitment and sacrifice. And so it's a natural thing for mm-hmm. us when we think about how can we help in a charitable way to look for causes that help those people that we support every day, day in, day out. But we also, many of us, came from those ranks. And there are things like CAUSE, which is Comfort for America's Uniformed Service Elite. This is about the people at Walter Reed who've come back from the war with these horrible wounds and their recovery process, and us helping in a small way to reach out to them and help them.
Paul, I just want to inject there that I have enjoyed our conversation very much,
okay.
And I wish you best of luck with your charity work, your intelligence work, your acquisitions that you're going to be doing over the next year, and of course, congratulations on the current one that you did this week. We appreciate that very much.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you.
Now, for our business community listeners, CACI is traded on the New York Stock Exchange with the ticker symbol CAI. And again, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Rebecca. It was a real pleasure meeting you.
You too, as well. President and CEO of CACI International, Paul Caffone. I'm Rebecca Blacksmith. Hey, thanks for joining us on The Leader Spot. This interview will be podcast at theleaderspot.com. You know what? It's now your seat.